Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by thesoberclub.com. I'm Genuinely Grace. This is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. I'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there'll be inspiration from experts, quitlet authors, and sober heroes. Hi, and welcome to the podcast. I hope you're well and you've survived another bank holiday last weekend. And I was just after bank holiday, I had to fly out to Spain just for a couple of days. And literally while I was there, I got a call from a producer at Good Morning Britain asking me if I could be on a debate about booze on flights. Now, of course, I couldn't do it because I was in Spain. It was absolute sod's law. But the amusing thing was, I literally got the call just after I'd stepped off a flight where the person next to us was just ordering God knows how much Prosecco. And it was 7:30 in the morning. And I'm thinking, what is going on? And, you know, the awful thing is, of course, I used to be like that. And actually, I don't think I ever started quite that early. But it is a thing, isn't it? That, you know, when you're drinking, all time stands still. You know, when you're in the air or in the airport, it's just bonkers. The queues at the bars, everyone kind of, you know, on their pints at 5:30 a.m. It's absolutely madness. Anyways, I don't know if you saw the Good Morning Britain debate in the end. I didn't actually see it, but yeah, it would have been good to have been part of that. I think you can probably guess what my answer would have been to the question, should we ban booze on flights? Well, yeah. I mean, you know, it's not very long, is it, to hang about and don't be drunk on flights. It's not okay. Anyways, how wonderful just to be free from all of that. You know, a word that we keep using all the time in the Sober Club recently is freedom, just hashtag freedom. People will write posts and they'll go, oh my God, you know, I'm a month sober. I never thought I'd get to this. Or I'm 3 months today, or I'm 200 days. And I just can't believe how my life has changed and how much freer I feel. It is just so completely liberating. But you've heard me say that a lot of times, right? If you do want support, do check out the Sober Club. I know I say it a lot, but not everybody realises that the Sober Club is a thing that you can join us. There is a small monthly fee, but there is incredible value, a huge member portal, amazing support and non-judgmental, inspirational content and just accountability, really. And it doesn't matter if you're sober curious or if you've been sober for 10 years, it doesn't matter, because we're focusing on the everything. We're focusing on the what next and how do you want to live a life that you haven't got to escape from. So we're sharing all of our joys and our triumphs. And of course, there's the odd post from someone struggling. Of course there is. And then there's so many people there to so many members there to encourage them, you know. So it's just really great connection. So do check it out if you haven't already, thesoberclub.com. We have got a couple of really, really cool things coming up in the summer. Finally got our act together to do a couple of events. I think I mentioned that we have a couple of Sober Club members coming over from one from the US, one from Australia. And of course, they want to meet other sober peeps. So we've set up a couple of events. So Tuesday, August the 15th in the evening is going to be a live Alcohol Free Life podcast recording. So if you're a fan of this podcast and you'd like to come and see how it's all done, we're going to be doing the recording as part of a kind of meetup, I guess you could say. So that event will be in London, Tuesday, the 15th of August. We've got some very special guests, including William Porter, Claire Pooley, and Laura Willoughby from Club Soda. And there'll be probably other people popping up too. So it's going to be a really great night. So tickets will be on sale for that very soon. So keep your eye on thesoberclub.com to get tickets for that, because tickets are very limited. They're going to sell out very quickly. It'd be amazing to meet you, some of the listeners, really. It'd be really great. So do check that out. And then a few days after that, Saturday, August the 19th, we have a Sober by the Sea in Southend. So this is just it's a tiny group, but it's an amazing opportunity to focus on what you want for your life going forward. So it does not matter, again, if you're sober curious or if you've been sober for years. We're focusing on what it is that you want. So we create a vision board and we do a little bit of motivational stuff. And there's some tips and tools and techniques thrown in there for whatever you want for your life moving forward. So very powerful dates, and they're really great fun. So pop those dates in your diary if you are going to be in the UK in August. That's Tuesday the 15th and Saturday the 19th. And then around that, we will be doing another Family Constellations. And I am still planning a retreat. I just don't have details as yet, but it will be coming. What was I going to tell you? Yeah, I was really pleased to see the piece in Good Housekeeping Mag this week. A whole rundown of, sort of profiling and reviewing the best alcohol-free fizz. Oh, that was really impressive, you know. No kind of judgmental kind of, it's not as good. Just really, really good reviews. So, yeah, good for you, Good Housekeeping Mag, kind of in the loop. Let's make it as completely normal to choose something alcohol-free as it is seemingly to choose alcohol. You know, let's just make it absolutely the done thing rather than it being odd and weird. That's the plan anyway. So this week's guest, I saw this just such fun book, and I just thought, I've got to check out this woman, really, really have. So Rachel Smith is a really interesting comic author, but she does what's the expression, autobio comics is the expression, and these are just fantastic books. She got a great review by Chris Addison, the comedian. They're kind of bittersweet, they're funny, they're just beautifully illustrated, and when I saw that she had this book called Glass Half Empty, I thought, okay, let's have a look at this. So basically Rachel is making sense of life, including grief, mental health problems, addiction, through comic art. What's not to like? Enjoy the interview. And we're talking about the new comic book, Glass Half Empty. Rachel, it's so lovely to chat to you. How are you?
It's lovely to be here. I'm very well, thank you.
Good. Well, I'm a bit croaky, as you can tell, with my loss of voice, but I'm holding up. I saw a copy of this book and I just thought, this is just great. It's so vibrant and funky and sort of relatable. And yet it's obviously dealing with a really, you know, intense. I mean, there's some deep stuff here. You know, we're not just kind of going to gloss over the surface, because you've found a way of presenting something that's actually really serious, which is, I think it's a fantastic way of doing it, you know, making it very relatable. Was that your intention?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sort of known for making books about kind of mental health issues and dark stuff like that.
Yeah.
And the reason I think it works really well in comic form is, like when I was struggling, a lot of the kind of self-help books or books about the kind of science around mental health are all quite sort of textbooky and quite dense. And when you're not feeling great, to be hit with a big wall of text is sometimes a little bit overwhelming.
So true.
Yeah. So I think I think communicating those kind of ideas through comics works really, really nicely in those kind of bite-sized pieces.
I haven't seen your other books actually, so you'll have to clue me in on those. But just take me back in time, because I know that you chart your journey around grief after your dad died. Just tell us a bit about that, because your dad had alcoholism, I think is what you said, and so
did,
you were
yeah.
talking about even from when you were a child you were trying to deal with that. Just tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. Yeah, I grew up kind of, my mum was my rock sort of thing. She was the reliable one. And then my dad, I when I got home from school, I never quite knew what I would be faced with, whether he'd been drinking in the day or whether he was all right and perfectly normal and making tea for us. So that sort of instability made me, I think, you know, helped make me quite the anxious adult that I am today. So it talks a little bit about that.
And, I mean, just to chip in there, just because I've had guests talk about being children of alcoholic parents, and it's a thing all on its own, isn't it? At that time, was there any support or help available, you know, for you or for your mum? What was the kind of situation, or did you feel very lonely in it all?
It's strange, a little bit of both. I think I was a bit torn. I went to I was 10 when I started going to Alateen, which is a group for young people affected by alcoholism, with people in their life that have alcoholism, usually a parent. And I went to those groups. You're supposed to wait till you're 11, but my mum got me in a little bit early.
Right,
I think I was just asking too many questions. And she was like, do you know what? It might be helpful for you to speak to other young people who are going through things. And my mum went to Al-Anon, which is a group of, where people can communicate problems that they're having with loved ones who are suffering from alcoholism or alcohol addiction. So I had my mum and I had Alateen. I think I talk about it in the book. I felt a little bit like a fraud going because the other kids there seemed to have it much worse than me, like, which again is part of that kind of imposter syndrome. Like, just because other people have it worse than you doesn't mean you're not, you know, worthy of asking for help and getting help. So it took me a long time to sort of accept that.
And then how old were you when your dad died then? Tell us a bit about what happened.
I was 21 when my dad died.
And was his death as a result of the alcohol?
We think so. It was we hadn't seen him for a little while, but we kind of assumed he'd sort of disappeared, and even if it wasn't the cause at the end, it was certainly the path towards it. On kind of a big binge, which he did every now and again.
And then what happened for you next then?
I sort of turned to alcohol a little bit to sort of numb the pain and at the time I was I'd just started university and stuff, and that, you know, kind of drinking culture there was sort of rife, so there wasn't really anyone to sort of say like, oh, maybe this isn't the right way.
Did you ever kind of, I mean, you must have made the connection, okay, that was what was going on with my dad and now I'm doing it, or did it feel just so very different because what you were doing was social drinking, in inverted commas? Did you kind of notice the distinction?
I suppose it felt like I wasn't really doing anything different from anyone else.
They
were all at the same point in their lives. I'd lost my dad, but so have a few people at that age. I mean, it's my dad did die very young, but you know, it's not unheard of. And you know, like I say, people in that stage of their lives usually drink on, you know, after university and things. So I sort of didn't really feel like I was doing anything out of the ordinary, which, you know, I mean, society tells you you're not as well, which is also a problem. But it wasn't till much later I sort of started to recognize that I maybe had some of the same kind of addictions as my dad did. But even then, I was too ashamed to sort of face it head on. So, because there was a lot of shame there from being addicted to alcohol, but there was also the shame of my dad, so I had the extra sort of layer of which just made the whole thing a bit impenetrable for me. So I just sort of didn't deal with it, and all the while I'm sort of, you know, digging those neural pathways in my brain, telling my brain that this is the way we deal with things.
And then I know you talk in the book about how you feel that your grief, you know, impacted on your mental health issues, and then that led to, as you describe it, self-medicating with alcohol. I mean, that's what it is, isn't it, really? Let's not beat about the bush. And then all of that was made worse by the pandemic, which of course made things worse for so many people. Tell us a bit about what was happening then for you then. Were you working at this point?
I was, yeah. I I work from home as a cartoonist anyway, so I kind of carried on just on my own stuff though, because obviously my clients all kind of finished working. So I was just sort of left to my own devices, which is never great for a Rachel. She needs tasks and routines and things. And like a lot of people, I was a little bit lost without those. I was also kind of trapped away from my partner, who, you know, had his own housemate at this time, and I had my own housemate, and we were living apart, so the rules.
Absolutely crazy, isn't it, honestly, when you even say these things, it's I can barely bring myself to even say it, because it's just like, what the hell? Don't get me started, let's put it that way.
You know, like for someone to say, I was separated from my partner because they were in a different bubble or whatever. It's just insane. Anyway, sorry, carry on.
No, no, you're fine. Yeah, it was really, saying it now makes it sound like Boris Johnson pretty much told me I wasn't allowed to kiss my boyfriend. And yeah, that was, that's crazy.
Yeah, exactly.
So like a lot of people, I my drinking got a little bit worse during the pandemic. And yeah, again, just became how I dealt with things. And, you know, sometimes it's a bit nice to drink a bottle of wine and make everything a little bit blurry for a while and a little bit easier to deal with. But then you've got to pay interest on that the next day. And, you know, it's always more, it's never worth, never worth the initial cost.
Yeah, absolutely. So what happened for you around that time then? Were you getting any kind of support? Were you connected to any, you know, anything that was able to help you?
I started having therapy, which was really good. I went to that BetterHelp website. This not sponsored by them or anything, just because I couldn't see anyone in person, so that seemed like a good thing to do. And even then, it took a while for me to be honest with her, even though that's what she was there for. I was just like, I am a little bit worried about my drinking, actually. And and even just saying that, like, kind of brought tears to my eyes, because it was so, like, this shame was so deeply ingrained in me. And but it's something I knew I wanted to work at. And also around this time, I was kind of thinking about my partner and you know, how I would really like to move in with him, and how I'd really like to stop trying for a baby, and all these things just seemed incompatible with the life that I had currently built around me, which was, you know, which gave way too much space to alcohol.
I think it's like,
where's everything... a baby gonna fit in with this?
Alcohol makes your world small, doesn't it?
It just
kind of makes everything very small, and that awful sense of fear that you don't get that sense of possibility when you're drinking. Wow. So we should say there is a happy ending, by the way. You've now got a baby.
I do have a baby.
Just in case anyone's feeling really bad at this point.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. So the therapy was helpful for you. And then you were sort of using, I guess, your expertise in comics to actually, maybe perhaps that was sort of slightly cathartic for you as well, was it?
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, I always find making these comics very, very cathartic, almost like I'm getting things out of me onto the page. And the fact that other people find my work very relatable and helpful as well is just a bonus, really. That's just amazing to me.
Yeah. Fantastic. Just before we go on to this current book, just tell me a bit about some of the other work that you've done, because I should have you know, been a really good interviewer and looked you up properly, shouldn't I? I was very remiss of me. So I do apologize. I mean, I ought to know everything about you so that I can quote things at you. But I just saw that book and thought, yeah, let's do it now.
Feel
free to blow your own trumpet and tell me a bit more about your other stuff.
Well, I did a book called Quarantine Comics, which was about lockdown and my mental health during that very strange time.
Oh,
that was the first book I did with Icon, who have done Last Book Empty with me. And then I brought out a book called Wired Up Wrong, which was kind of generally about how I feel about how my brain works and how it doesn't quite it doesn't quite work properly, and my strange coping mechanisms to deal with depression and anxiety, and it kind of gives some helpful advice, hopefully, for other people dealing with that kind of stuff.
So when you talk about, you know, wired up wrong, in inverted commas, do you think that have you got some kind of diagnosis, or do you feel that there's some kind of neurodivergence going on? Does it matter exactly what it is or not?
I mean, I was diagnosed with depression. I think I had moderate depression at the time, which always sounds silly to say, because however depressed you are, it always feels pretty all-consuming at the time when you're in it. Because quantifying it seems a little bit strange to me, but I guess they have to do that. I don't know that much about the science. I'm not a scientist or a doctor or anything, I hasten to add, but I guess I just sorry I can Sorry, I completely lost that. Could you repeat the question?
Okay, yeah, no. I was just out of interest. You know, you mentioned wired, you know, differently or whatever, and I just wonder whether for you it feels important that there's a diagnosis if you feel that you have some kind of neurodivergence or whatever. It's probably only in my mind because a couple of weeks ago I interviewed someone around ADHD and just how many people who are drinking more than they want to have got ADHD. And I just thought it was interesting as to whether people find that a label, in inverted commas, sort of helps or hinders, or whether all that matters really is how you get on and manage however you're feeling.
It's an odd one, isn't it? I think personally the kind of label wouldn't have mattered, because I mean, I knew I was struggling. I knew there was something there. I knew I was suffering from depression. I think the label can sometimes be, certainly with things like ADHD, I think it can be useful to accessing other care through the NHS and things like that. I guess it can open up some dialogues with your GP and things like that. I haven't been diagnosed with ADHD or anything. I think I have some tendencies there. Certainly I can't speak on that really. Depression, I think it did help to have that word given to me quite when I was really young by a doctor.
Sure, sure,
it almost sure. What's the word I want? Almost kind of legitimized it. That's the one. Kind of almost made me feel more like it was worthwhile getting help. Although obviously that isn't the way it should work, but in my brain I was like, okay, right, it's a thing now, and I've said the word out loud, I'm depressed, I need some help.
And you know, that link between drinking too much and depression or mental illness, I mean, it's just huge and yet so very rarely connected. Good that you're able to find a therapist that you could have that conversation with. But, you know, I've heard people say that even with therapists, sometimes they don't get very far when they bring in the alcohol piece, because the therapist, you know, bless them, doesn't know where to signpost them, just doesn't know how to help them with that piece. And just because you get a little bit of support, or, you know, perhaps a lot of support for your mental health issues, doesn't mean that you're going to be able to quit the booze. Need different support for that, you know.
It's incredible how there isn't more of a connection there, because
exactly.
I mean, my friend Heather, who appears in Glass Half Empty very briefly, she calls alcohol depression juice, and it absolutely is. It doesn't do you any favors at all.
No, exactly.
Yet,
exactly.
When you sort of delve a little bit into kind of, you know, support around mental health and taking and being mindful and taking time for yourself, you know, the number of kind of illustrations I've seen of a woman taking time for herself in the bath and she has
glass of wine. Absolutely.
Always there.
Absolutely. I mean, there are even there's even yoga with wine now. Have you ever seen those advertised? I cannot get my head around this. It's frightening, isn't it?
That
used to be me. I used to think that was my self-care, you know, dirty great big glass of Sauvignon, I thought was my self-care, which is just, it's so sad when I think back now.
Yeah.
But anyway,
it will have been doing the opposite.
Exactly, 100%. It's quite raw, this book, isn't it? It's very raw. It's very honest. Tell us a little bit about some of the lighter bits, you know, because we've got some nice characters in there. So tell us a little bit about what we can expect.
I'm losing you a little bit, Jane.
Oh, can you hear me now?
Yes, I can. Yes.
Oh, sorry. I don't know why that was. Just tell us a little bit about some of the characters in the comic.
Sure. I mean, readers of my stuff will have met Barky and Friendly before. Barky being the big black dog who represents my kind of depression and anxiety, who follows me around. And Friendly, who is a big white dog who follows me around. And she kind of represents my common sense and myself my self-worthiness
Haven't you got Rufus the cat in there as well?
And I've got Rufus my cat, although it's talking about quite you know, obviously quite deep and dark stuff sometimes, but it's hopefully people will think this as well. It's dealt with in quite a playful way sometimes. And I, the way I draw barky and friendly is kind of often shorthand for how I'm feeling at the time. Like if barky is very big and scary looking, it means my mental health isn't very good. Whereas if friendly is bigger than him, it means I'm doing okay and things like that.
So that really is cathartic, isn't it? You know, even if you weren't publishing a book, if you were just to kind of be using that almost like journaling, that's really powerful.
Well, yeah, and it's kind of, it makes me be a bit mindful about how I was feeling at a certain time, because I have to think like, okay, well, how big do I draw Barky in this scene? How big do I draw Finley? And yeah, it's helpful for me. Selfishly, it's really good that I make these books.
And so I'm guessing that you're sober now, right?
I have I know, so at the end of the book I do kind of say I do drink occasionally, but I mean it depends what you mean by sober. I have a glass of wine every Friday at the moment. That's currently how I do, but I mean, some sober just means not drunk, right? I mean, I don't ever want
well
to be
there are all
again.
Sorts of different ways but, of
yeah
using,
I mean
there?
That's what I mean that's what I mean
yeah sure so you yeah, would I'm consider still, yourself I'm, a mindful drinker.
I would. I think I'm still on my journey. I'm still kind of figuring out, but I certainly don't want to drink more than I am ever again. That one
well of course you know I can't not encourage you to listen to a few more of my podcasts and consider not drinking anything on account of why would you?
Yes.
But of course I'm going to say that, aren't I? But I love the stuff you're doing. I think it's really, it's just lovely. It's just so relatable. And your illustrations, as you obviously know, are fabulous. Really fun. I love all the lovely bright colours. So tell us the lovely happy news then. So I'm guessing you are loved up and you've got a 5-month-old baby. That's so fabulous. Tell me all about the baby.
So I moved in with my partner eventually. He's called Rob, and we have little Henry.
Fabulous. 5 months old
now, and he's just a joy. And honestly, I don't think I would be here if I hadn't, you know, started really questioning what alcohol was doing for me in my life. And just making that room for things that I wanted. And I think for me, the real kicker wasn't that I just had to stop drinking. I had to figure out things to replace it with. I had to really change how, if I had a bad day, what am I going to do? And in the book, I talk about, you know, things that I can do that isn't just reaching for a bottle of wine.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, how else can you kind of scratch that itch, isn't it, really?
I certainly don't ever want to drink a whole bottle of wine ever again.
Yeah.
And I can't believe I used to do that on a daily basis. That's incredible to me now that
I know
that I do that to my body and my brain.
Yeah. And how's your mum doing?
She's good, thank you. Yeah, I talk about my mum a lot in the book. She's really good. She's good.
It's a tough one, isn't it, being with someone who's had that level of drinking. It's really tough. So I really appreciate you bringing all this out into the open and writing this very raw and emotional, but I suppose your stuff is sort of bittersweet, isn't it, really, and but very, very personal, which is lovely.
It's my books are a little bit heartbreaking, but they always leave you quite hopeful, I hope.
So what would you like people to get from this then? What, in an ideal world, what would be the takeaway?
That you're not alone, that it's that the world is a lot better with you in it, and you're worth doing the work. You're worth thinking about this and thinking about whether alcohol is making you happy. And just that first step of just maybe being a little bit mindful about whether you want that extra drink of an evening or whatever. It's all, and it's fine to take little baby steps towards this. Yeah, and if like me, you've got, someone who was in your family that was, really a problem drinker, just because you're not as bad as them or as worrying as them, it doesn't mean that you can't do a little bit of work and really make room for more important things in your life.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Rachel, thank you so much for being my guest. Do you want to give us your website where people can find out more about you?
Oh yeah, I'm rachelsmith.org, and it's Rachel spelt the awkward way with an A-E-L.
Ah, with it, yeah, cool, got it.
And yeah, my new book's called Glass Half Empty. You can order it from all the usual places.
Yeah, I'll put all those.
I'd love for people to get it from their independent.
Exactly. It's lovely to support independent shops. I mean, there are so few of them now, aren't there? But yeah, if everyone goes into their nearest independent and asks for it, that would be great. Mm-hmm. Yeah, fantastic. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So make sure we put the link in the show notes to Glass Half Empty by Rachel Smith. Just a reminder that we have our events in August, Tuesday, August the 15th in London in the evening. We'll be a meetup, just a say hi, have alcohol-free drinks. And we're going to be doing a live podcast recording. There'll be a chance to meet some guests. I forgot to say, the reason we're doing that, one of the reasons, is because it will be the 250th episode of this podcast. I mean, we'll hardly get those words out. Incredible. 250 episodes. It'll be by then, right? Wow. How amazing is that? So if you've listened to all of them, you mean you have to come, right? You absolutely have to come. And I'm going to be chatting to some of the very first guests on the podcast, all those years ago, 3 years ago, whenever it was I started. So I really hope that you can join us for that Tuesday, August the 15th. Going to be very limited tickets. We'll get the tickets out as soon as possible. So check out thesoberclub.com/events. As soon as those tickets go live. And then on August the 19th, Saturday, August the 19th, Sober by the Sea in Southend, which is where you get to create a vision board. You get to focus on creating the life that you don't have to escape from. And again, for any of these events, it doesn't matter what stage you're at. Don't forget, you can join the Sober Club as well, thesoberclub.com. And if you that's not your thing, for whatever reason, you don't want to do that, it's not a problem. You can still support this work if you'd like to. You can go to buymeacoffee.com/Janie Lee Grace. I think that works. And that would be really good. And of course, I'd rather have a coffee with you in person. But in the interim, you can do that if you want to support the work. Whatever's going on for you, just stay connected. It really is the key. Just make sure you've got support. If you kind of hole up inside your head, it never goes well, because those voices, there's all that stuff from the past, there's that reminder, oh, you'll feel better if you have a drink. Now, absolute BS. You need to challenge those thoughts. And when you get these thoughts that you know are not good for you, you know that alcohol, everybody knows alcohol's terrible. Don't allow yourself to be continually fooled by all this BS. Just get yourself supported. And then when the thoughts come in, because, of course they still do. We're only human, right? Of course the thoughts still come in. Of course the wine witch still goes, that was all very well when things were going okay for you, but now you've had some stress in your life, or now there's something changed, whatever it might be. Doesn't matter what it is. Alcohol will never be the answer. Whatever is going on for you, whether it's a celebration or a commiseration, alcohol will never be the answer. There's always a better way. And you absolutely owe it to yourself to just have that freedom, find that amazing freedom that we talk about here so much. So if you are struggling, always reach out. You follow me on social media at Janie Lee Grace. I'm very easy to contact and I will reply if I can. But stay connected. Don't try and do this on your own. And if you are in the early stages of ditching the booze, then give yourself a big hug and a big pat on the back, because it's just awesome what you're doing. And, just really, really enjoy. If you want to share that it's your day one, then let me know. You can tell me. I'll hold your hand. I'll, be your champion. But don't try and do it on your own. Don't hole up. And if you're struggling, just always reach out. And I'll see you same time next week. By next week, those tickets will definitely be out. So make sure you check out the Sober Club. Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by the Sober Club. Please rate and review. And if you want support, accountability and inspiration, and you want to live your best life without the booze, check out thesoberclub.com.